That to me is the hardest journey when someone is marketing their skill or their talent, is being able to, from a practical branding perspective, how can you get the point across to the people you want to serve in as few words as possible? The longest journey is to simplicity.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and I just got back from Austin, Texas, where I had an amazing time speaking to the freelancing community out there. So my friend Emily invited me out to a conference she runs every year called the Austin Freelancers Conference, and I gave a talk, about a 30-minute talk, that was basically like a condensed, abridged version of double your freelancing rate. So it was all about avoiding commoditization, going through and trying to quantify the value of your projects and then using that in your proposals. And if you've gone through that course, you know all about it, but it was really, it's always fun going in front of an audience of people who especially don't know me. So, you know, I just hosted my own conference and basically everyone there at least knew who I was and had probably gone through or read some of my stuff. But just about everyone here hadn't heard this podcast or been to my website or anything like that. So I had a lot of people come up to me afterward who were just kind of like, wow, I've been selling myself wrong this whole time. I didn't really know what I was selling. And it's just, you know, I love doing stuff like that. So if you do have an event or you know somebody who organizes an event focused on freelancers or maybe just people, small business owners who run services companies, I would love to talk with them. I really enjoy doing this kind of stuff. But yeah, so today I sat down with Jeffrey Shaw, and Jeffrey is a kind of like a, he's a business coach, and what he focuses on and does really, really well is how companies like ours cannot be just generalists. So, I mean, you've heard me say this before, but if you just describe yourself as a general purpose web designer, web developer, whatever, you know, fill in the blank, it's hard to be competitive. It's hard to stand out. So that's what Jeffrey and I talked about on, you know, on this episode, is we wanted to really get at the root of how can you develop a unique message for your business? So when you're self-employed, you're in charge of choosing your own health insurance, right? I mean, that's one of the big kind of wake-up moments for most of us when we quit our salary jobs. And with so many options out there, and each of these options having their own complicated sign-up procedures and everything, it's really easy to end up picking the wrong plan and overpaying by a lot for your insurance. And that's where Stride Health comes in. So what they'll do is they instantly compare every available health plan out there to help freelancers like you find the perfect match for you and your family. And by helping you pick that right plan, they actually help each member of theirs save on average over $400 a year. So check out Stride Health at stridehealth.com/double to create your free account and see which plan they recommend for you. And even if you have health insurance, you're really not off the hook because you don't know if that plan is going to be a good fit next year in 2016. Most plans will actually increase by several hundred dollars next year. So before renewing your old plan, why don't you take 10 minutes to explore what Stride recommends for you and look for a cheaper plan with similar or identical benefits and coverage. Stride makes finding and enrolling in health insurance headache-free. And in fact, you'll be done in 10 minutes, which is 90 minutes faster than going through healthcare.gov. So to get started, head on over to Stride Health at stridehealth.com/double. All right, I just want to thank Stride Health again for sponsoring the podcast. It's a great service. I would really recommend those of you who specifically live in the U.S. and have to deal with health insurance. And now that you're out on your own or about to be out on your own, really great company, great people behind it. All right, so let's jump right into my discussion with Jeffrey Shaw. Everyone, I'm here with Jeffrey Shaw, or is it Jeff?
Jeffrey is totally fine.
Okay, cool. Jeffrey Shaw. Jeffrey is a business coach. He's the host of the Creative Warriors podcast. He's a professional speaker and a photographer. And as I just learned, you're based in New York. So welcome to the Business of Freelancing, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Either one is fine.
My father-in-law is Jeff, and he's the only other Jeff I know. So, but well,
I call myself Jeff. The problem is that the brand, if you will, if you were to Google me, is Jeffrey Shaw. Yes.
So I will call you Jeffrey.
That's great. Well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Cool. So I think we wanted to talk about, you know, a lot of the things that I tend to produce on Double Your Freelancing, on the podcast and everything else. I get kind of obsessive about tactical things, but we don't always talk about kind of the why, you know, the bigger kind of concerns about, all right, you're no longer employed, you run your own business, you have a brand, this is it, right? I'd love to just hear from you a lot of both what you learned, because making that, you know, that venture yourself when you first made that, and a lot of what you've learned just from, I know, you know, looking at your podcast, you've talked to a lot of different people, you know, I'm sure through osmosis, you've learned a lot from them. And I just like to know kind of a high level overview of, you know, what does it mean to have this brand of yourself, and what are the implications of that, and what can we do given that?
Sure. Well, I think, and I'm glad you've prefaced it that way, because at the end of the day, it's kind of a balance. You know, my feeling is that it's a balance between inner work, you're knowing your why, and outer application. And, you know, it's you can't have one without the other and be successful. So I have been in business for myself since the age of 20. I've actually never worked for anybody else. And even prior to then, at 14 years old, I was, you know, being entrepreneurial in my own way at that age. So while I may not have been conscious of my why and things that inspired me and motivated me when I was 20, I was more action-oriented. But then as I matured, why I did things and how that could be leveraged to a practical application became more important to me. So now in my coaching of other people, it's kind of a yin and yang. It's kind of a back and forth. There's a balance that could be found. But at the end of the day, I think you have to get underneath. You know, you have to understand concepts and some of the challenges. As it's just challenging when you're in business marketing yourself and your talent. There are inherent challenges that come with that you have to understand the concept and then apply practical steps to it, right? But it's foundational. I think you can, too many people that are, whether they're freelancers and creatives, I love the fact that they can be action-oriented, but what happens is without having that foundation of understanding, they can enthusiastically be going in a million directions and getting nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, I like to compare it to, you know, we know how to drive, we know how to go down roads, but if we don't know where we're going, you know, that's not exactly forward progress, right?
Right. And I think it's very, you know, again, there becomes this process, and all my coaching clients have ultimately, eventually has observed this in me, that I love to dig deep and do the deep personal dive and find out what makes somebody tick. But the moment it's marketable, a flip switches in my head. I'm like, you know, now, you know, let's take your why and let's make it marketable. Like, how is that a trigger and a signal to the tribe that you want to serve? Right. And I think that's just a really necessary quality, that you dig deep on the inside, but then you have to do something with it. But on the other hand, if everything's coming from your head, I don't think it's possible to resonate with the people that you're trying to serve. And I'll give you a real quick example. I coached someone who was a NASA scientist and decided to go into business for herself. And I remember her saying to me, like, she couldn't believe how challenging it was to be. I mean, this was a NASA scientist. And here she is now trying to be in business by herself and unable to. And she said to me, she goes, how is that I was able to do for others what I can't do for myself? And that's exactly it. It happens to the most brilliant, because the moment you go into business for yourself, when you are your brand and you're marketing your talents or skills, something you're good at, it's inherently difficult.
Yeah. Well, I found a lot of people personally end up, you know, they're really good at technically at what they do. And then when they go out on their own, they realize, well, you know, having that business is much more than just your talent. I mean, it's about kind of how you sell that talent, how you pitch that talent, how you, you know, all the overhead that comes with that too.
Right.
And a lot of people get lost in that, I think.
Yeah. And the branding behind it, you know, that's obviously the big component of the business. And that to me is the hardest journey when someone is marketing their skill or their talent, is being able to, from a practical branding perspective, how can you get the point across to the people you want to serve in as few words as possible? And that's the longest journey is to simplicity.
So I want to deconstruct that for a second. So by branding, you know, if I consider, let's say I'm Joe Freelancer and I am a freelance web designer. Obviously, I know what it means to help other companies with their brand. You know, I help them with logos. I help them with style guides and all these different things, right? How does that translate to, you know, I mean, a lot of us, we consider ourselves as, you know, I'm me, I am my brand. What role does branding have when it comes to how your brand relates to your intended customer, how your brand affects what it is you end up doing? I just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page. Everyone listening is on the same page about what you mean when you say branding, for instance.
Sure. And I actually think from a branding perspective, as in how we'll talk about in a moment, I think it's more important now than ever because it's such a noisy marketing world.
You need to stand out, right?
You need to stand out. So that's exactly it. So I create with my clients, I create what we call a standout statement. Okay. So, and I've made a distinction how this is different than a tagline or slogan, because tags and slogans have been around all along. But a standout statement, it actually, you arrive at it through really getting a clear understanding of why you do what you do and what you stand for, you know, and owning that. And then from that, creating the statement that becomes a mental trigger for the people that you want to serve. So, and it should be pretty meaningless to anybody that isn't your perfect client. And that's when you know you have a really good brandable, marketable standout statement, is when the people that you're meant to serve, that you choose to serve, they get you. But people that aren't in your world, they don't get you. Like, what does that even mean? It's like a foreign language, because that's when branding becomes a trigger. And that's ultimately what we have to do today.
Would that mean you're in that statement, are you describing a specific problem or problems that somebody would have, and then they're able to really understand that you're speaking to them based on the fact that you're, you know, empathizing, I guess, with the issue they have?
It could be, or it's just, you know, I'll tell you, one of the ways I learned how powerful this was more than anything was as a podcast host, because we would be, you know, we're contacted, as I'm sure you are too, we're contacted all the time for people to be guests. I interviewed a lot of authors. So when authors are coming out in new books, we're contacted all the time, and I don't know them all, right? So either I or somebody on my team, we go to their Twitter page or we go to their website, and we don't have a lot of time. If they haven't made it clear what they stand for, within 10 seconds, we move on. And the reason that's important is because we're very clear on who the avatar is for Creative Warriors. Like, I know who my listening audience is, and I'm meant to serve them. So I'm very clear on their needs. So when someone contacts us to be on the show, I need them to trigger a response in me as quickly as possible that they're aligned with the people I serve. So an example is, I interviewed an author, Tom Asiker. He was one that stood out to me because he contacted us, coming out with a new book, contacted us to be on the show. I didn't know of his work, but we hopped over to his Twitter page, and the header on his Twitter page said, I think it was, "We become the stories we tell." All right, now I'm hooked. I read that, and actually a team member was looking on their computer next to me and says, "Jeff, look at this." I lean over and I'm like, "We become the stories we tell." I know instantly that that person's aligned with the thought process of my audience, and we want them on board, right? That's what, that's what a standout statement is, when you can get the message of your work out as quickly as possible. Scott Belsky is another one. You go to his website and it says, "Make ideas happen." Like, I'm curious now, because that matters to me. I'm about idea and creativity and innovation. To someone else, maybe a Wall Street guy, you know, living a, you know, really conservative, you know, thought processes, might go there, and that means nothing to him or her. And that's the point. Like, a really good branding message should be both a magnet for the people you want to serve and a filter for those that you don't.
That's really just, it's qualification, right? I mean, you're further qualifying those who are in that target audience, I guess, of yours, and you're disqualifying those who aren't.
Yeah. And that's the paradox of being in business today, because the internet is a really big freaking net. Like, it's a really big net. You're casting a big net by being on the internet. So the paradox is that we're all interested in SEO and getting as many eyes on our work as possible. So, and because of that, we're casting a really broad net. Now you have to figure out how to only call forward the fish that you really want to work with. And that comes to your brand identity. And to me, being the conceptual, you know, a little more of I was gonna say a woo-woo business coach, but hey, I like the inner work, and I'll own it. To me, what really makes you stand out is to define what's unique about you in the first place and owning it. Like, just, hey, you know, this is who you are. This is what is unique about what you can offer. And then, as you said a little earlier, I mean, you have to define whether it's marketable and whether it's an appropriate business, whether you can make money on it.
This statement, this persona, I mean, the usage of it, is it mainly for, like, the examples you gave of, like, in your Twitter bio or a headline on your website? Or is it really meant just to kind of influence everything you write, everything you do, or, you know, every sales meeting and everything like that. Is the statement itself what's important, or is it how that statement affects the workings of your business that really ultimately matters?
And great question. And you know, it's all of the above, because the fact matter is that's the switch I mentioned earlier. Like, the statement, to those that I help derive at the standout statement, they feel it on the inside. Like, it is personally, one of the qualifications of a standout statement is that it be personally meaningful and marketable. Right. So to them, it becomes the inner voice. And that's important too, you know, particularly in today's world of content marketing. So if you're generating content, if you're putting Facebook ads, whatever, you want to have a constant voice. When done well, the standout statement is your voice. Like, it's you're discovering your own voice, and it's marketable. Like, one of my, I'll give you an example. One of my coaching clients, she is a photographer. She's a woman, and she does primarily kind of glamour boudoir type of photography. So she's working primarily with women. And the standout statement that, I mean, it was a process. It's a process of inner exploration, even a little pain. I mean, her story in particular had a little pain to it as to how we arrived at this standout statement, which is be unapologetically beautiful, right? And women that get that will show up at droves eventually. She's new in business. But they get, you know, to you, that might mean nothing. And to a lot of people listening, that might mean nothing. But to a woman who, and the reason we arrived at that, this client of mine I'm speaking of, she's a very beautiful woman. And her experience as a beautiful woman has been just as challenging as a woman who is not as beautiful on the exterior, but wants her inner beauty brought out in a photograph. But they both are suffering, because even beautiful women, you know, there's a lot of assumptions made by a beautiful woman. They're not as smart, all these stereotypes. And as a beautiful woman herself, she has suffered equally. So there's way she has lived her life downplaying her beauty and apologizing for her beauty and limiting herself until she, you know, with my coaching, realized that she doesn't have to do that. So she's unapologetically beautiful. So now she has a statement that's telling the world, be unapologetically beautiful. And these women come to her, she photographs them. She gives every one of them a t-shirt that they wear that says, be unapologetically beautiful across it. And these women, the women that get her, are proud.
I mean, we all know how, you know, how effective niching is, right? How effective it is to have a specific that kind of target persona who is your ideal client, and, you know, casting what it is you do, what you're saying and everything around ultimately selling, in this case, that person, whether it be a financial thing or just a, like, getting them on board to, you know, to what you're doing in that mission, I guess, that you have in business. I'd like to still find a way to tie this back to the average, let's say, designer, developer, marketer, writer that is in my audience. You know, I mean, it's one thing to have like a Scott Belsky-ish kind of headline that's kind of, you know, it's intriguing, but it doesn't really, you know, it's not specific, I guess, right? Making ideas happen or something?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, make ideas happen.
Right.
Yeah.
So just about every other web designer on the planet, their strong headline on their website is something like, you know, I make ideas real, or I, you know, building a better web, or, you know, something like that. And it ends up actually, while that sounds strong, I guess, to a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people are kind of jumping on that bandwagon of having something like that. And from my perspective, they're not always standing out anymore. What kind of criteria should go into creating that that statement? I mean, should it be geographically restrictive? Should it be restricted based off of the kind of company you want, kind of companies you want to work with? Maybe you only consult with book publishing companies. And should that be a part of that statement? How detailed do you think this exercise, this branding exercise, should be for somebody?
You know, it can be hard to tell. I mean, some of the qualifications I feel is that it has to be meaningful to the person, it has to be marketable, so it's practical, and it has to be compelling. You know, and compelling is one of those words we can't define what somebody's going to find compelling. Right. I mean, there are certain things, but that's just it. I mean, you want your trigger to be compelling. My standout statement that I use, and it's on my sites, my social media, is clarity is the fearless union of conflicting ideas. Right. It's a little wordy, but I get probably five tweets a day, people commenting on that. I even had someone quote me in a TEDx presentation, right? Somehow that combination of work, it has triggered the curiosity and to the right people.
Mm-hmm. So it's more of like a lure, it's an entry point. It's not as much a cohesive, this is Jeffrey Shaw, yeah. Right?
I think a lure is a good word. It's a trigger. Mm-hmm. I mean, more than anything, it's a trigger, like I said, which is so necessary because it's such a noisy marketing world. You have so little time to get someone's attention. So it's a trigger. Author Todd Henry, when you go to his, I think it's his Accidental Creative website, which is his business website, not his personal brand website. The statement to me that stands out is that we are an arms dealer for the creative revolution. It's just compelling. Like, you just instantly want to know more. It may not define exactly what they do, but you were mentioning before about the niche. And I think this is where this plays into it. I think the word niche in business needs to be completely redefined, particularly for freelancers, because the business model of the future certainly looks like it's going to become a business model of diversity, what I heard recently called a portfolio business. That being the case, the old-fashioned niche definition is to find one thing that you do and one audience that you serve and do that. And while that could be a practical place to start, I think in the future it'll be increasingly more difficult. And I don't think it's actually very exciting for most creative people or freelancers to do one thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of pushback comes from, well, I don't want to do the same thing each and every day, right? So that's kind of a concern a lot of people have when it comes to niching, even though I think practically it's easier to sell when you have, you know, to somebody within a niche if you have a mastery of that niche.
Yeah, it can be a good place to start, don't right. get me wrong. But I think, I don't think you can stay there very long because, you know, a niche today is gone tomorrow, right? I mean, in such a time of rapid change, I don't think you can stay any one place very long. I mean, look at what's happening in the music industry. I mean, it's just changing constantly. Spotify's in, now Apple's in. Like, who knows what's going to happen there? So you can think you have a niche, you know, niche, I stream music. Well, guess what? As soon as you open up the space, there's going to be 20 competitors in that space. So it's really hard to stay in a niche, any one niche very long. And we're seeing examples of companies that are busting out of the old definition of niche, like Virgin. I think Virgin, you know, as a company is a great example. I mean, they own everything from hotels, airlines to spaceships and beverage companies and mobile phones and, you know, very portfolio oriented business model.
It's a very personality-driven one, too.
I mean, yet,
it's focused
exactly.
on Branson and kind of that attitude he has toward life,
You've
which permeates into everything.
Exactly. And that's the branding component. And that's the standout statement, right? I mean, it may not be the same statement for every component of business, but you expect the same experience at a Virgin on a Virgin plane that you expect at a Virgin hotel.
Right.
Right. Zappos is another really good representation of that as a company and how they've expanded. I mean, their core message is around delivering happiness, and they deliver happiness to their employees as well as their customers.
Now, would you say that that's based on the fact that I think people tend to want to buy from personalities instead of buying from companies? Would that be one, like, is there something in the thought process of somebody booking a flight on a Virgin America flight that they're thinking, I want to be more like Richard Branson, and or at least the kind of paradigm he exemplifies, therefore I'm going to fly on his airline?
Yeah, Brennan, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's why for the freelance community, this is more important to understand than ever. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, when you go in business marketing yourself and your talent, this is when it becomes so incredibly important you understand so many of the differences. And that's one right there. Like, when you're in business marketing yourself, your talent, your skill, it is increasingly more important that your personality be present. Big companies are trying to emulate that, and companies like Virgin are doing it well. But for the most part, big companies, you can't Chase Bank. Like, you can't really identify a personality to that. TD Bank, on the other hand, has done a pretty good job at creating a personality because they're kind of the anti-bank. They make fun of rope lines and chained pens, right? So they've added humor to it. So they're taking on a persona. But when you think, look how hard big companies are trying to create a persona that we small guys have already, right? And that's just, you want to find your uniqueness, own it, and make that your marketing brand.
And I mean, frankly, we can kind of cast that personality around us. I mean, it's hard. Microsoft, maybe they're a bad example, but they're a little too big to have, you know, there's a lot of red tape that needs to happen for them to even decide on any. I mean, you see this, like you see where I just saw their what is that Surface product that they have, which is like a tablet.
Yeah,
and their ads on TV look identical to the iPad ads now, right? And you can tell that they're like, well, you know, obviously Apple's doing really well with their iPad, so we just need to kind of tactically emulate whatever they're doing. But I think there's a degree of, I'd love your opinion on this, but I think there's a degree of artificiality in that from the consumer's perspective, where, or at least from my perspective, maybe not everyone else, but I see that as, okay, this is a company that's trying a little too hard.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this is one thing I suggest to my clients all the time is that we have to keep in mind consumers are so much more sophisticated than, you know, we've been led to believe. That years ago was the old adage of market to the age of a five-year-old, which is remarkably insulting. And remarkably, I forget, you know, it's as if people forget that business owners and executives are also people. You know, so I don't need to be marketed to at the level of a five-year-old. I want to be marketed in an intelligent way, right? So we can smell inauthenticity a mile away today. And I think it's so important to remember that consumers are so much more sophisticated. There's so much more exposure to everything that you're marketing to a sophisticated group, and don't lose sight of that. And it, you know, inauthenticity can be smelled a million miles away. And some brands should just own who they are and what they're good at. I've always been I love looking at certain products, like Q-tip comes to mind, or there's certain products that, you know, you look at their packaging, you know, instead of cleaning your ears and you're looking at the packaging and it, you know, has their website on it. And I'm thinking, why in the world would I go to Q-tip's website? Like what exactly would be there, you know?
Right.
But maybe there is, you know, maybe there's something really compelling when you get there. I have no idea. But I even find humor that some companies even bother having a website. Maybe there's coupons, or maybe, you know, so there must be some value in it. But that's the difference between when you're a freelancer. You can develop your brand and you're so much more agile. It's just, you know, I think a lot of micro businesses and freelancers, I think they're hesitant sometimes to be vulnerable and really display their personality, particularly the more creative bent group, because, you know, us creatives can be a little unusual. We're out of the box. So for most of our life, we've been told to not be who we are.
Yeah. You know,
we've been told to focus when we lack focus.
And I mean, I've seen too that a lot of people, I think they're scared because they don't want to turn people away. Like, it's so hard for new business owners to say no.
Yeah. I mean, I walked into a little gift boutique in Florida, and there's this jewelry display. And there's this little sign on the display that said something about you know, you rock the world and you look at the world from a different perspective and you want jewelry that displays that. And I didn't even look at the jewelry, this little sign. And I said, you know what? That is such good marketing, because you know exactly what that jewelry is going to look like before you even look at it. That's good branding. Like, and this is just a little sign in a jewelry case. And like I said, I didn't even need to look at it. I eventually did. And it was exactly what I thought it would be. A little edgy, a little, you know, just what you'd expect it to be. Like, you rock the world and you want the world to know it. That's good. That's good branding.
You know, it's funny. So I'm in Norfolk, Virginia, which is they call it Pentagon South because it's very big Navy base, very militarized. And when I was growing this agency downtown, we would go to a lot of the networking groups locally. And these are the kind of the old boys, right? They would be there. They'd be in suits. They'd be very formal, very, you know, crew cut haircut, you know, that kind of buzz cut, I guess, whatever. It's, you know, very, very much like that. And here we are, myself and the guy who led my business development, we're both in there. At that point, we were in our upper 20s. And we'd show up to these events in, you know, a print t-shirt and some, you know, jeans, right? And it was funny because that to some people there, it was like, who are these cocky sons of bitches, right? Who are showing up. But then our name was We Are Titans, right? And our business card had this like Greek guy with a spear throwing it, right? And we, you know, everyone else was like so-and-so services or solutions or, you know, something very like a lawyer would like the name, right? And but it was funny because when we would follow up with people and we'd travel to these, you know, networking events or conferences. And when we would follow up later on, everyone remembered us because we had this distinction that kind of set us apart. I mean, we went to a venture capital conference where it was a bunch of stodgy bankers, and we show up with that look, with that brand. And it actually ended up really making some people say, look, these are young and upcoming. This is a young and upcoming company. It's obvious. I want that. I want a taste of that. So I'm going to hire them. Right. So I didn't really know it at the time. I was just, you know, this is me. This is how I dressed. This is how I worked. And it was funny how that played out.
Yeah. But that's exactly the point. You were being who you were. You know, and that's, I had said earlier, like I went into business as a photographer when I was 20. So I wasn't, a lot of what I did wasn't conscious effort. It just turned out that I did a lot of things right. And I did a lot of things right because I didn't have a model for what I was trying to create. There were other photographers around, but I wasn't trying to create. I had a very different vision in my mind. I wasn't trying to look like any other photography business. So I was doing nothing but trusting my own gut instinct. Like, well, this makes sense to me. I mean, nobody else is doing it this way. Most, you know, if anything, I was looking at other companies. I've learned most of what I have learned. I've looked at other companies, you know, to see how they do things, not my own industry. But so you're being true to yourself. That's just you showing up to these meetings. By being true to yourself, that's actually, it's not what you're wearing. It's not the costume. It's not even the branding. It's the truth to the branding. It's the truth to the message. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Sally Hogshead, but she's brilliant and she's such a great friend. And her, I love her because the work that she's doing, I think, turns a lot of conventional psychology and branding upside down, because, you know, things like Myers-Briggs and Strength Finders, they're all good things, but they tend to be about, they evaluate how you see the world. What Sally's work does, and she has a book called How the World Sees You, and she'll love me for promoting her because she's, I adore her, so I'm happy to. But her book, How the World Sees You, is about, you take a self-assessment test, and it's about how the world sees you. You know, and it identifies two primary triggers. And I think this is, it's more than a personality test, particularly when you are a freelancer or an entrepreneur, because it gives you the information you want as to what the world finds fascinating about you, which a lot of the result of that, and I've given this test away to thousands of people, they always agree with it. They also almost always realize they're not owning, like really stepping up and believing that primary trigger until it's kind of in their face. And one of the things, so she also, in the assessment, also gives you a dormant trigger. And the dormant trigger is probably what is least compelling about you. And I asked her when I was interviewing her, I said, well, should we try to strengthen that? And she says, no, don't bother. And my dormant trigger is, it's kind of around fear. I don't remember the exact word, but it's about fear. Like I can't generate fear if I try. And I had said to her, I said, so in other words, if I hide behind a door and I jump out at somebody to scare them, they're more likely to say, wow, that's a really cute shirt. And she said, that's exactly it. Like, I just know who I am. I can't generate fear. I look at, you know, I go to stores like, you know, G-Star, Raw, and I look at really cool cutting edge, and I want to be that person, but it's so not truthful that I'd look, you know, my kids would be like, Dad, what the hell are you wearing?
Right.
So that's the difference, you know? So we're living in a time when truth and authenticity matters more than it ever has been. And kudos to our world. Like, I think this is such a great time to live because of that. And you have to show up for who you are. You weren't trying to be anybody that you're not. You were just showing up for who you are. And that's why people remembered you.
Yeah. Right. And it was funny because it was exactly kind of what you said at the beginning, or what you said about your early days, which is, I was not intentionally trying to have a quote unquote brand, right? I was just at that point, I was just being who I was and exercising that in my business, right? And, you know, when I look back and I look back at how I grew this company, we were, we hosted events, we threw parties, we would do things like every time we would launch a new project, we would invite our audience to come and to a bar with us, first rounds on us. And we do all these quirky things, which weren't like, I mean, we had competitors who were developing custom software locally to us. And you go to their, website, and it's kind of the typical stock images that you would see everywhere else. They had this like PR section, which was press releases that they wrote, you know, that were basically, you know, just fluff, I think. And to a lot of our customers, to a lot of our kind of passionate fans who were local to us, they liked us because we were, and we were told this quite a few times, they liked us because we were authentic. We were, you know, there was something in us that they wanted for themselves. And therefore, they commercially worked with us because, you know, even though we could build software and the team across town could also build, let's say, that same exact piece of software, our software and the experience we deliver to them, because so much of freelancing, I mean, I think a lot of people forget, it's not all about what we do. It's not all about the deliverables. It's about the experience. That's what people remember. So our experience was different, right? Like, we weren't bringing them into this like stodgy boardroom conference room thingy. We'd go to drink, you know, have a drink with our client. We'd invite them over to, you know, have a at our conference table, and we'd be like, hey, do you want a beer? You know, it was so different, I think, from what a lot of this area was used to, that it ended up working really, really well for us.
Yeah. And I think that's the back and forth, the organic part of being doing business, right? I think there's being true and authentic to yourself and leveraging that. You know, and this is, to me, this is really a key point of our conversation, is that, and it's almost a hard concept for some people to get until you've experienced it. Like, you were being true and authentic to yourself. And in doing so, you got clear on your voice. So now you can make the voice, you can make the experience, which is, so now you're manipulating the experience, if you will, but in a positive way, so that it's aligned with the voice.
That's right. Yep.
Right.
And that's exactly what we did. We just learned how to systematize that.
Yeah. But you can't do one without the other. You can't just create a false experience and manipulate the experience, because clients will know they're being manipulated. But you can't also just, you know, have this, I know who I am, and meditate on it, because unfortunately, that's not going to get you anywhere either. It's this constant, it's the journey to being clear on who your brand is and having it be an authentic brand. And particularly if you're a freelancer or an entrepreneur, you know, if this is a life endeavor, you better be happy with it. Like, you better, you don't want it. You can't be changing your brand identity. If your brand identity is you, it's who you are, right? So it's meant to be longstanding. So you want to do the work of understanding of that voice. And then you do, you in a practical way, manipulate your strength so that you can get your message out there.
Right. Right. Now. So I think in closing, the big takeaways would be, like, look, do some sort of self-analysis, I guess, right? Like, look at who you are, what you stand for, your personality. And I think, I guess what I would take away from this is, don't be afraid to incorporate that into how you market yourself, right? How you present yourself to the business world at large.
And not only not be afraid to, I think you have to. You know, when you, as a freelancer, I mean, that they are buying, people are ultimately buying your personality. I coach, having been in the photo industry for 30 years, I coach a lot of photographers. And one of the pivotal moments that they need to understand is they often think they're selling a thing, because what they produce, I work primarily with wedding and portrait photographers. You know, as a coach, I work with a wide range of people, but those photographers that I work with tend to be wedding and portrait photographers. So they're resulting in photographs, and they think that they're selling something tangible. And I'm like, that's just a consequence of the process, but that is not at all what you're selling, right? I mean, I'm coaching a guy now. I think this is a fun example of it. He's kind of an edgy. He's an edgy, very cool guy, and he wants to do wedding photography as well. And you know, I said to him one day, I said, to me, you sound like the kind of the backyard barbecue wedding photographer. And he goes, that's exactly what I don't want to do the big glossy weddings. I want to do like the cool, interesting ones where people are tattooed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, then there's your standout statement. Like, that's what your website needs to look like. Like, that's who you want to call forward. Identify yourself as the backyard barbecue wedding photographer. And there's a whole host of people out there that want that.
Yeah. And you're going to disqualify a good percentage of people, but that's
okay.
You
got it. And right? That's okay.
Because it reinforces everyone else.
Yeah.
It reinforces that small group.
You got it. As long as you've been smart enough going into business to know the market that you've, your standout statement is niching down for you. Is there enough market, right? And are you in the right marketplace? And he's in a perfect place for it. And I know the guy's going to do well, because now he has this identity. We're redoing his website. I'm like, now your website needs to look gritty. It needs to look like everything has to be tied together now. Like, people have to feel the experience when they experience you that's true to who you are. Stop trying to, you know, you don't want to have to be the traditional wedding. There's nothing traditional about this guy. Spiked red hair, the whole bit, right?
Yeah, which again, it's that polarizing personalities tend to be the ones, I think, that are a lot of the people I've, you know, I don't know, you're in New York, like people like Ramit Sethi, right? He's a very polarizing person. You have a lot of these people. I mean, he's not trying to appease everyone. He's trying to say, look, if this is you and you like my kind of, you like the way I write, you like the tone and kind of way I look at the world, great. If not, go away, right? And it works extremely well for him. So Jeffrey, what's the best place for people to find out more about you and what you do? I know you have a podcast also. Where should people go?
So the podcast is Creative Warriors. I have an ebook that I am happy to offer. It's the 8 Essential Elements, which I think it's fabulous. It's kind of the Creative Warriors 8 Essential Elements that I consider to be the real elements that you need when you're in business marketing yourself and talent or skill. And they can get that at 8essentialelements.com. We actually, just in a few days, we'll be launching a new platform for our community, and that's called creativewarriorsunite.com. So not being sure exactly when this will air, but I think it's safe to assume the website will be, it's launching on July 7th. So after July 7th.
This will be after that.
Yeah, so it'll be creativewarriorsunite.com.
Perfect. Well, Jeffrey, thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate the talk. And stay cold up in New York.
Well, thank you. I am thrilled to thank you for having me on. I'm glad you're out there supporting this community. I'm sure you, like a lot of people, saw recently that CNN released a report that 60% of the American workforce will be freelancers by 2030.
Yes.
So you are in the right space serving providing a really valuable service for what will be the greater majority of our country moving forward. So,
Our country and the world.
So good for you.
Yep.
Thank you, Brendan. I appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That wraps up another edition of the podcast. Again, if you haven't reviewed or rated the podcast, please head on over to iTunes, type in Brendan Dunn, type in The Business of Freelancing, leave a review. I really appreciate it. I read each and every one. If I notice your name, I do try to reach out and drop you a little note. Next week, I'm going to be talking with Naveen Didikavi, and we're going to be talking about what to do with all this information. You know, how do you take the things that you hear on this podcast, the things you read online, and actually systematize them into your own business and make a huge dent, make something amazing. So Naveen's going to talk about how he's been able to build up a lot of recurring revenue as a result of systematizing a lot of what he's read and heard online and on podcasts and so on.